November the 5th is getting closer and closer. We need to be preparing. How do you prepare? Get your sample ballot. Get your sample ballot. Your precinct committeeman will usually distribute that, and do some homework. You can use iVoterGuide.com for federal and statewide offices. On judges and amendments, it's harder. I would suggest you look in your state for a family institute or a family policy council. Usually they have voter guides and they'll help you with more local races. But also, you can do a lot. All you have to do is search the judge's name, the candidate's name, and you can find out who's supporting them, who's giving them money. What is their past like? What did they do for work? Just look for clues in the bios, even on their website, or even, you know, Wikipedia gets some things right occasionally. You can find out a lot about people by just searching their name. So do your homework. Please don't go into the voting booth and leave half the boxes blank. Just don't do that. Everything is important. Amendments change your constitution. As an Amendment 4 in Florida on abortion, abortion will be legal for all 9 months. It will be in the constitution, almost impossible to change. And you probably have amendments like that in your ballot too. So don't be lazy. You can find this stuff. If you don't know how to look on the internet, then ask your kids, ask your neighbors, but be diligent. Go in there with that sample ballot, armed and ready to vote, and check every single box intelligently and not just guessing. All right, November 5th is coming up, and I'll see you at the poll.
You shouldn't have come here. This is our war. Not yours.
300,000 dead and counting. That's not a war, Mr. Ito. It's genocide.
These people, they have no food. We can either help, or we can sit back and watch a country destroy itself on CNN.
Rangers, Deltas, today we go.
Name?
Blackburn.
Date of birth?
2/27/75.
I was trained to fight. You trained to fight, Sergeant?
God, I was trained to make a difference.
So guess what? You're going out today.
What?
It's what you wanted, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Just remember when everybody else is shooting the same direction. You ever shot at anybody before?
No, Sergeant.
Me neither.
Once that first bullet goes past your head, politics go right out the window.
Hey, baby, it's me. You there? Pick up if you're there.
I love you, baby.
RPG! Hold on! 6-4 is going down!
My men are surrounded by thousands of Somali militia. I need help now.
Where's the rescue squad?
We're in.
I can't do it.
It's what you do right now that makes a difference.
People ask me, why do you do it, man? They want to understand it's about the men next to you.
Don't let that man crawl! Somebody help that man!
That's all it is.
No one gets left behind, you know that.
Nobody asks to be a hero. It just sometimes turns out that way.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7, and that was the trailer for Black Hawk Down, which is the story of how the American military, one of our major helicopters, was on a mission in Mogadishu, Somalia, and it was a failed mission. It was a nightmare for them. They were ordered to do something that they could not execute. Men's lives were lost. The commanders on the ground, who were wonderful, were given bad orders, and so they were stuck in a horrible situation. Now, one of those commanders at the time was Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, who is our guest today. Jerry Boykin was part of the 1980 Iran hostage rescue attempt. He spent time in the Delta Force. He was there 36 years in the military. His story is amazing. He's told it in a book called Never Surrender. Well, today we're going to do something different with him. I've actually talked to him about three different things. We met at the Pray Vote stand conference by Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago now, and had a great discussion in three different parts. And so I'm going to play it in three different parts for you. The first part is going to be his history with Islam and his knowledge of that. And that's when I met him, was during that period. And then the second part is going to be the first time he has ever told publicly the story of tremendous injuries he suffered in a completely different way. And he's going to tell us that story. And the last part is going to be his connection to the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces. That's another fascinating story, his speculation as to what Israel is going to do next, in the time span that we were discussing it. And so I think you will enjoy it. But first, as peaceful pro-life advocates face imprisonment and millions of dollars in fines, the left continues their attacks, not only extinguishing the lives of the unborn in exponential numbers, but also trying to take away our right to defend them. The fate of an aborted baby is even grimmer. They never get a chance at life. But in this darkness, there is a way to defend life, and that's through the incredible work of Preborn's network of clinics. When you support Preborn, you offer life and love to mothers in crisis and at-risk babies. Each life-saving ultrasound costs just $28. But hear me, Preborn can't do this without us, the pro-life community. Please give your best gift today and sponsor as many ultrasounds as you can. All gifts are tax deductible. All you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can go to any podcast platform and listen to us, whether it's Apple or Spotify or certainly AFR.net, our home base. Also, sandyrios.com, which is my website, and any social media platform, you can find us there. Well, when you hear me next, I will be talking to you from Radio Row at Pray Vote Stand in Washington, D.C., and my conversation with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, a hero for all time, the author of Never Surrender. We start our conversation first on Islam and its effect on America on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something. All right, well, it's Saturday morning at Pray Vote Stand, so I might have a Saturday morning voice. I don't know. It's not that early, but yeah, okay. But this is Sandy Rios, and we are at a Pray Vote Stand in Washington, D.C. at the beautiful Omni Shoreham Hotel. It's up like in the northwest part of D.C., a little further north, up close to the embassy kind of row and that sort of thing. It's a beautiful place up here. It's off of Rock Creek Park, if any of you know Washington, D.C., so it's a beautiful place to be. And so, I'm starting the morning with one of my favorite people, a dear friend, who is a champion. And you know him because he's been my guest many, many times. I want to give him a decent introduction here. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin serves right now as Family Research Council's Executive Vice President, with responsibility for overseeing day-to-day operations, including policy, church ministries, finance, development, communications, human resources, facilities. That's a lot. I didn't know you did all this stuff. Information technology, constituent communications, and customer service. I have a complaint, General Boykin. I didn't know you were in charge, so now I know who to call. I'm kidding. Anyway.
I think that's a little embellished.
You think so? You were looking for a job when somebody wrote this.
Yeah.
But he was one of the original members of the U.S. Army's Delta Force. He was privileged to ultimately command those elite warriors in combat operations. Later, General Boykin commanded all the Army's Green Berets as well as the Special Warfare Center and School. He spent 36 years in the Army, serving his last 4 years as the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. He's an ordained minister, so you know all of that. And when I first met you, you were still with the government. You were doing the intelligence stuff, and this was when the Muslim Brotherhood had infiltrated some of the highest places in our nation, and that's when I got pulled into that. And that's when I first met you. I don't know if you even remember that, but you were in this. You knew all about that.
Well, I remember those days very well because that was a period, a very difficult period for me because I was getting beat up by the media because of I had been speaking about Islam and trying to get the truth out about what Islam is and what their intentions are for America. So those were difficult days when I was there in the Pentagon.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure. Because after 9/11, we should maybe talk about this for a minute. I came to D.C. 2 weeks after 9/11, so for my assignment at Concerned Women for America as president. And one of the first briefings I got was Frank Gaffney. You know, even the embers were still hot, you know, at the Pentagon when I got there. Right. And, of course, and I was in North Korea, as you know, when it happened. It was just an amazing time. Where were you when it happened, 9/11?
I was at Fort Bragg commanding the Special Warfare Center and school there that trains all the Green Berets.
Were you able to respond in any way? Did you activate, or were you guys just standing by, wondering what was happening next?
Well, first of all, as soon as it happened, we locked Fort Bragg down so that there would not be any more terrorist incursions into any of the U.S. facilities, and we were one of the largest military installations, so we shut that place down.
What a strange time. And the interesting thing to me is I moved into an apartment building where so many people were assigned, you know, to Washington, D.C. That's where Bruce came from, Chicago FBI, to be, you know, part of the pushback. And the building was filled with people. It was like bees buzzing. Right. Everyone was on alert, and everyone was pushing back. It was an amazing time for love of country, really was. And who would have thought that, like, within just a few months, the introduction of Islamophobia, the whole made-up word, the whole turning of the worm so that we were not allowed, Americans were shamed to have their natural response to being attacked by Islamists.
Yeah, well, George W. Bush didn't help the situation at all when he got up and said, Islam is a religion of peace. And I thought at that moment, because I had been in the Delta Force and our whole focus was terrorism, most of which was Islamic terrorism, and I had studied it. I understood it better than most people. And I thought, either you don't know what you're talking about or you're just lying to the American public, because all you have to do is just read a little bit of the Quran and you'll see that it is not a religion of peace. Now, there are peaceful Muslims. In fact, the majority of the Muslims do not want to be part of a jihad. But that doesn't change the fact that their religion is based around jihad.
Well, and when push comes to shove, they will join. We've seen that in tribes and peaceful areas where they activate people who would rather be in peace. You know, and we've had so many Muslims, even terrorists, come out of that, many of them with dramatic conversions. Right. And as I recall in interviews that I've done, and I know you all know all about this, General, I've heard them say they didn't really want to kill, but they were forced to kill, and they were actually relieved. And when they learned about grace and you could forgive and they didn't have to conduct violent jihad, it was a great gift to them.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I wrote a novel with a former terrorist, a former Muslim Brotherhood terrorist.
I remember that.
Yeah, and he's a dear brother. He came to Christ out in Oklahoma, and as a result of that, you know, I was connected to him and asked to write a book with him. And you know, Sandy, several years ago, we had a Muslim that came to this event as one of the speakers. Zudi Jasser.
Yes, Zodi.
And he got a standing ovation here. So it's not the fact that we hate Muslims or that we hate those people who don't want to be part of the terrorist network. It's that we're practical about it. Those that have reconciled living in America and living in the freedoms that we provide here, we support them. It's their right. I don't agree with their religion, but it's their right. But those that are here to do us harm, which is exactly what Kamal Saleem was here for. He was here to recruit for the Muslim Brotherhood when he finally came to Christ. And then all of that changed, and he's now a great American.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of stories like that. But, of course, we have infiltrated now lots of terrorists, thanks to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. It's shocking, isn't it? But back to the line of thought. So we had the natural response. Americans were angry. A lot of young men even left. Tom Cotton, I think, walked out of college. I think he was at Harvard or... and left and volunteered. And this is the story for so many young men, and they went to fight. So then suddenly, by spring of 2002, I was on CNN, and already they were introducing Islamophobia into schools and classrooms and the shame of criticizing Islam. And that was one of the first battles I had on television. But they managed so much so that... you saw the progression. I should let you talk about how that changed and how Islamists became part of government and then part of the military.
That's exactly right. And do you know that at one time the director of counterterrorism at the CIA was a Muslim?
And not a peaceful Muslim.
Well, I won't go that far, but he was a Muslim.
Yeah.
So I don't know how well he was vetted. But the fact that there was a Muslim that was leading the effort against terrorism is kind of ironic.
Yeah. Well, and I should say they scrubbed the manuals. The FBI training at Quantico was completely scrubbed of what Islam really is. And I guess the military did the same thing. And so it's and then Barack Obama comes in and appoints Muslims to keep positions. And also you and I fought that whole chaplain, a little different issue, but Barack Obama appointed a lot of Muslims to chaplainships. So it was...
That's right.
So now here we are, and we're in a confused time. People don't really understand still.
You know, tonight I'm going to do the keynote, and I'm going to talk about the imperative to be warriors, but one of the things that I'm going to read them is a quote from the Bible that says, "Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." And what has happened in America is that we have conformed to the world. That's why it's so easy to start something like Islamophobia, and people will jump on it right away because it's easier. It's easier than thinking through and doing the research and trying to understand what is really going on. Not just what the news is telling you, not just what the White House is telling you, but figure it out for yourself. And Americans have a tendency not to do that. When something like Islamophobia comes along, it's a lot easier. Just, you know, we just hide our head in the sand and act like it doesn't exist.
It's a really good point. It happens on all these issues, on whether it's transgenderism or earlier before
exactly.
That, homosexual rights, and after that, gay marriage. People just really want to take the path of least resistance. And so here we are, and our national security is threatened. But before we leave that, I just want to say, you know, you've written a couple of books, and I want to commend those books, but I don't have the names at my fingertips. You talk about your military service is... absolutely stunning. It's the stuff of movies. Mogadishu was Black Hawk Down was the movie that was based on your experience. And we've talked about that in other broadcasts. We don't have to tell the whole story. But it is absolutely incredible. And what's the name of your book?
Say that again.
What is the name of your book about your warrior
adventure?
Yeah,
Never Surrender.
Never Surrender.
Right.
Wow.
And by the way, Wednesday... Thursday was the 31st anniversary of Black Hawk Down.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is one of the most incredible stories I've ever heard you tell. Again, I won't ask you to tell it again. Are you going to tell any of those stories when you speak tonight?
One, I think. Right? One. I'm going to tell them a story about when I was wounded over there, and the guy right next to me was killed. And when I finally got to my feet and saw that he was dead, I said to the Lord, I said, God, why did you take him and not me? I said, Lord, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to come and be with you. And he has young children. Why did you take him and not me? And then I went to Camp Family Research Council years later, 2012, I went to be the executive vice president. I'm still there. But I hadn't been there but 2 weeks when I heard shooting in our lobby. And I ran down into the lobby, and there was our building manager with a bullet hole in his left arm and a man laid out on the floor, splayed out on the floor with a pistol out in front of him where somebody had kicked it away from him. And as I stood there contemplating whether to pick the pistol up and finish this guy off, the Lord said to me, I spared you to fight again in this battle. That man was there. He told the judge he was there to kill as many of us as possible because we hated homosexuals. That is absurd. We're probably the ones that love them the most because we're willing to tell them the truth. And I'm going to tell them that story tonight. And the whole point of it is we're in a battle, and we need to recognize that we are in a spiritual battle, and you got to get your armor on. And you got to stand up toe-to-toe, nose-to-nose with the enemy, because he's not going away. When we're serving the Lord, we need to recognize that we're going to be in a spiritual battle, but we don't have to be afraid.
It is interesting to think that with your war background, and I've heard you talk about being warriors and what it means. I mean, I love listening to that. I've learned so much from you, General Boykin. And to now apply that, you have so many pastors that you guys have coagulated, that's probably not the right word, but through Family Research Council, and you've been so involved in that, and you go out and speak all the time. And I'm just thinking, you know, this is the missing link for our pastors. They've been raised in times of peace, and they've not fought, they've not learned really, okay, this is a blanket statement, forgive me, pastors, but many have not learned how to be real men and how to fight, even protect their families if someone assaulted them. They don't know how to bear arms, they don't know how to fight. And so they're not fighting from the pulpit. They're not fighting because they don't even know how to do it.
I wish there were more people here. I mean, we've got something like close to 1,000 people with everybody considered. But I wish there were more people here because we have Jack Hibbs. He is a warrior. He is a warrior pastor. He's just like the Black Robe Regiment pastors. And we also have Gary Hambrick, who is here. He's a warrior. And we've got some real warriors out here at this conference that have a pulpit that they go to every Sunday, and they tell people, get your armor on and get in the battle.
Right. And they both just demonstrated that they're not going to bow the knee to illegal, unlawful orders. And
that's
so,
exactly,
you know,
right.
They've really put it out there. So I think that's kind of a rehearsal. I think that's a rehearsal for what's coming for all of us. Well, back at the studio, we're going to take a break for a second with General Boykin. Wasn't that something? But it's nothing compared to his story of, I think, his greatest challenge so far in life, and it wasn't in battle. And we'll do that right after this. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Well, it's time to continue our discussion with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. This time he's going to talk very personally about an accident he had that he's never spoken publicly about, one of the greatest challenges of his life. Let's listen. Well, I think recently you went through, I'm guessing, one of the hardest battles you've ever been through. Mogadishu is a dramatic story and so many others where you were almost killed in battle. But you were speaking before a pastor's, I believe, right? Pastor's conference of some sort?
Men's conference. In Houston.
I think people should know what happened and what's happening with you now.
Ever since I've been at Family Resource Council, I've been in a spiritual battle, but I'm delighted to be where I am and to say that I've overcome everything that has happened. But I was down in Houston doing a men's conference, and the day before the conference, we went into the First Baptist Church in Houston, big church. We had about 1,000 men. But the day before, I went in, gathered the team around, and we started talking about where we're going to put people to handle the altar calls and so forth. And I was turned with my back to the audience, you know, and I turned around I started to go off the stage, and when I stepped backwards, there was nothing there. And I fell off, and it was a fairly high fall, and I hit my head. Well, I broke my hip and hit my head, and I was really messed up. So the next day, I got up and spoke. And they had a couple of guys that kind of went up with me.
Did you know you'd broken your hip?
No, but it was, we went and got a cane from Walmart, and I was walking on a cane, you know, but I had a couple of guys that kind of held me up at the pulpit there so that if I did get wobbly, and they held me up, and I gave my portion of the thing, and then at the end, I was supposed to read a declaration, and I couldn't read it. And finally, there was a doctor in the audience, and he came up and he said, "You're showing all the signs of a significant concussion, so we need to get you to the hospital." So I said, "Well, stand by, I got one more thing to do," and that was when we bring everybody up and we bless them. We go along and lay our hands on them, and we bless these men and their sons. And so when that was over, they took me to the hospital, and that started what was a miserable period of time when I was trying to recover from this concussion. I didn't realize a concussion was as serious as it is, but I would hallucinate, and I woke up one morning here in Washington in a little townhouse, and there were people downstairs, and they were there to kill me, and I could hear them talking. And we have Betsy here with us right now, and if she hadn't called me, I couldn't figure out how to use my telephone. And if she hadn't called me, and then my wife said, you get over there and sit with him and make sure he doesn't do anything stupid. But I was hallucinating, and I was just absolutely sure that there were people there that were there to kill me. And I've had a couple of episodes of that. I don't have it now because I've really kind of been delivered from the effects of that. But I'm 76 years old, so every time I forget something, I think, I wonder if that's just being 76 years old, or if that's the concussion.
Oh no, but I think you're. I believe at least at this point in this conversation, you're understating that head injury. You hit hard. And it affected your hearing, right? It took away your hearing.
I am deaf in both ears. But every night, I asked the Lord to restore my hearing. Now, I wanted to see an instant miracle. But I've been deaf since the 5th of April. But now I have had the cochlear implant put in. It's not activated yet because they have to wait for the hole in my skull to clear up. And then they will attach the external device that will give me hearing. And then it's a process of learning how to use it and adjusting it periodically to get the maximum effect from it. But I'll tell you something, Sandy, and I don't want to scare any of your listeners off, but I got a call from a woman that I don't even know. She was in England. This was like back in February. And she said, I met you at such and such a place, and I didn't remember her. But she said, the Lord has given me something that I'm supposed to tell you. And that is that he has prepared you for the greatest challenge that you've ever had in your life. She said, I don't know what it is, but he told me to tell you that. Wow. So I didn't.
Is that before the accident?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
No. It was after the accident.
Oh, okay.
But it was before I went deaf. See,
okay.
I didn't go deaf over time. I just woke up one morning and I was deaf. Just deaf. And it was about a month and a half after that. It wasn't even that long. It was about a month. I woke up and I was deaf. And that's been an incredible challenge. And I realized that must be what she was talking about. Now, I know people say, oh, great, you're one of those. Well, I guess I am.
Oh, I'm one of those, too.
Yeah.
I believe in the miraculous work of God and speaking through people. Some of it's silly, and if it doesn't turn out, it isn't God.
Right.
But if it does, it is from God.
That's
you know?
Right.
So, no, I'm right there with you. I believe in the miraculous work of God in our lives now. It's, following him. Your life is that. Your whole life is that. You've had God do miraculous things on the battlefield. So, and maybe, did that assure you? I mean, when you thought back to that phone call, did it kind of, in a weird way, assure you that God was, like, working in you, even though it was horrible?
It did, yes. As soon as this happened, I knew that this was what she was talking about. And part of what she said to me was, but God has asked me to assure you that he will be with you through this.
Oh.
So, it's been difficult. I don't mean to say that it's easy, but there was a period of time where my wife communicated with me on this little app on the phone called Big, which you write a text and you enlarge it and you hold it up so whoever you're talking to can read it.
Bruce, write that down.
Big. It's called Big. Yeah. Get it. So that's the way we communicated for a period of time, But since I've gotten the hearing aids, if I'm close enough, I can hear. Mm-hmm. I can hear a person. And that's but if there's background noise, it's just it's very difficult.
So we're functioning today because you've got the headset on and your hearing aid evidently is tolerating that. But the other side you can't hear from. That's where the cochlear implant is. Yeah. Could I just say, for what it's worth, you know, I see you pretty much weekly because we're on a Zoom call. And I see you, you know, we don't get to chat, but and I would personally, as your friend, I was just worried sick. I could see that you were, that you'd really been injured, and it just, oh. But I saw, I'm just saying, I saw you at another conference a couple months ago, and you looked so vital, so recovered. I was thrilled. Yeah. So I'm just telling you, as an observer, I see the strength coming back in you. And, you know, I see, I'm really optimistic. I don't know if you are. Easy for me to say, right?
I am. I am. Yeah. I've asked the Lord what I'm supposed to take away from this. I've asked the Lord to reveal to me how he's using this. Now, I know he is because I'm closer to the Lord now than I was before this. You know, and I've... For years, I have been close to the Lord, I felt. But now I understand I'm closer than I have ever been.
You know, that reminds me of Johnny Erickson Tata, who is a friend of mine. And we got acquainted because of my severely disabled child. So I ended up doing some conferences for her, and then we became friends. And the thing that I would say about her, I thought I was close to God. I didn't brag about it, but I thought I had a closeness to him, and I know he'd given me strength, and he did, and it's all true. But in Johnny's presence and in her prayers, because she's, for those that don't know, quadriplegic, has been since she was 19 from a terrible accident, I realized what it was like to be really in his presence, because she is just every minute of every day. And eye has not seen and ear has not heard what God has prepared for us. And it's his presence that we're going to be in his presence in the fullest of ways. And this is giving you a taste, you know, of that, however miserable it has been. But, you know, I think your life, this is my perspective. God has used you to reach other people, whether it was on the battlefield, the soldiers that you mentored, the example that you set of being a warrior and being a man of faith in God. You just were fearless and you proclaimed him at the same time. And he's not done with you in that regard. This miserable thing is, your story is now reaching people in a different way. It will. Absolutely. But you think, I mean, I know for me with my daughter, it's a very big price to pay. It's a very big price to pay, and yet God does not waste it. And I think God is going to probably use this in ways you can't imagine right now.
I think there's no question about that. There's just no question that he will use this. I've already learned so much. I've learned a lot about just human nature, you know, and it's been a surprise, actually, because if you know, when you can't hear, and you go in to buy something in a store, and you say to the lady or the gentleman, I'm deaf. 90% of them will get a pad and write on that pad. It's been incredible. They'll write on the pad. They want to be helpful. And you'll find a few jerks, you know, that don't want to listen. But I have found out a lot about human nature that I probably knew, but I had kind of not focused on it. But there is something in a lot of people that they want to be helpful, and you know, they want to help you if you're humble enough to say, I can't hear you. And so it's been a learning experience. And
I would imagine hard for you. You're always the helper. You're the big guy in the room who helps everybody.
I have had to humble myself and say, I can't hear you. And now, it's okay because I used it when my wife says, "Did you take out the garbage?"
It was convenient hearing loss, right?
Yeah. There's some advantages to that.
I'll write that down, too. So, well, pretty moving stuff, and you can hear in General Boykin's voice just how difficult this has been for him. And so I'm so grateful he told that story, and I hope it's, however sad and hard to hear, encouraging for you just to hear his courage, never-failing courage. It's an amazing story. Well, if you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And now, General Boykin and I will continue our discussion, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, and we'll talk about why he loves Israel so much and how he knows so much about the IDF in this next section. Here we go. All right, well, one other topic before we close our discussion. I have to talk to you about Israel. You have always been involved with the military there. You've been, like, knit with them. I'm not sure how that started. Did it start when you were with the American military, your relationships with the IDF?
Yes. I lived over there with the Golani Brigade up in Akko, way up north there, close to the border. And I can't say what I was doing over there, but if you look at my book, there's a picture of me and a Israeli major, and we're both in Israeli uniforms.
Interesting.
Because we had to keep our presence low-key so people didn't see American military there. So I wore an Israeli uniform the whole time. And we did some good things, but I learned so much from being there. And by the way, my children are Jews. Yeah, their mother is a Jew.
Your wife is Jewish? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that bond that. Yeah. In a lot of ways. Okay, so you've kept in touch with them through the years, and you always know, like, the heart, you have the pulse. So my question is, you know, I've been following Israel closely, and you and I have some relationships there, nothing like what you have. But the word I'm getting is that the Israeli military, you know, they're singing like psalms, Old Testament psalms, and praising God, and the people are doing the same. Okay, so now, as you and I are speaking, they're in a tough spot because they've had all these victories. They, you know, Nasrallah was eliminated. They've eliminated much of the weaponry in Lebanon. And now the world is waiting to see what they're going to do in Iran. So I don't know. I'd love your perspective on that. You can't say if you know. Well, what do you think they might do? They're not going to do nothing.
No. I think there's a couple of things. Well, first of all, at the very top of the options would be attacking the nuclear facilities.
Right.
Now, the problem with that is there's two problems. One is it's a long way, and they would have to have every airplane and every tanker flying that day to refuel, because it's not a go in, drop your bombs. It's go in, drop your bombs, come back, refuel, rearm, and go back and do it again.
And no place around that would let them resupply.
Saudi Arabia has at one time offered to give them authority to use some of their airspace and even an airfield.
Wow.
I don't know whether that still stands or not, but that was something that occurred, as a matter of fact, while I was still on active duty. So I think the Saudis are a possibility. But go after the nuclear facilities. But Those are deep underground facilities, and they're going to have to saturate it in order to set it back. Now, I don't know that they can take it out completely, but they can certainly set it back and take out the centrifuges and where, you know, things like that are being assembled, and take out the capability to launch those things. In other words, what's the warhead going to sit on? Is it going to be a ballistic missile?
Okay.
And that could be part of it. But the other thing is this. Take out their oil fields.
Oh, wow.
Take out their oil fields. Take out their ports. If they can't transport their oil, their economy goes in the dump, you know. Now, it will also impact the world gas prices.
Right.
But at this point, America needs to be willing to accept higher gas prices to make sure that our number one ally, for practical reasons as well as for spiritual reasons, in that part of the world is Israel. That's the only democracy
right
there. And so I think that they could do those things. And of course, it would be an intelligence issue as to whether they could locate where the leadership is, but they can certainly take out some of the leaders. They showed us they can do that.
The people in Iran would be so very, very grateful if that should happen. But my next question is, how do you think Putin would respond to that? Because Putin has been, you know, Russia's been developing this strong, they've had a strong relationship with Iran for a number of years. But how do you think that Putin would respond to that? Do you think he just let it go? Does it depend on the election, maybe?
Putin is too bogged down in the Ukraine right now to be extending his military capabilities too far from home, because Putin did not expect to be fighting in the Ukraine for now, what, a year and a half, over a year and a half. And so I don't think that Putin, he may give them materiel, but I don't think that Putin wants to take on another front, so to speak.
That makes a lot of sense.
At this point,
that makes
because
a lot of
he's
sense.
Got so much going on in the Ukraine.
Yeah. Well, so we have this election coming up. We're getting so close to it. I agree, and do you agree, with President Trump that if he is elected, I think that a lot of the world would settle down just by virtue of him being elected, because they would be afraid of him, and there were a lot of things they wouldn't do that they might be thinking about doing. You think so?
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, look, one of the reasons that you're seeing a lot of what's going on over in that part of the world is because nobody over there thinks that we are a strong nation anymore, that thinks that we have the resolve to do what has to be done in order to not only protect ourselves but protect our allies. I think they look at us as weak, and they've seen nothing but weak leadership. I mean, how do you give your enemy billions of dollars and then talk about how we've got to do something about those people? Well, yeah, I can tell you something to do. Don't give them any more money. Because what they're doing, what Iran is doing, is they're giving it to Hamas and Hezbollah.
And Hezbollah, yeah.
Yeah, and everybody says, well, Hamas is Sunni and Iran is Shia. The enemy of my friend is my enemy. Right?
Yes.
And that's the way they look at it.
Yeah.
They've been supplying Hezbollah, even though they're Sunni. Not Hezbollah. They've been supplying Hamas, even though they're Sunni. You know, Hezbollah is predominantly Shia.
I didn't realize that. I don't know how, but that, and for those there, like there, for people that don't know, we'll just make it simple. Those two branches of Islam are at each other's throats. They have a different view of the end of time. One goes back to, I think, Muhammad, more pure line, and so there are all these rivalries, and they generally are at war with each other in a way. They are not friends. But they have joined together in many ways around the globe to fight the West.
I want to say one thing about three nights ago when Iran fired the ballistic missiles into Israel. I don't know if you've talked to anybody over there, but I have read a letter from a guy over there who's a Jew, and he said, I'm now a believer.
Meaning in God or meaning
in God?
In God.
I'm a
he Yeshua.
Said,
not Yeshua, but
he said
Jehovah.
Our three anti-air capabilities worked like magic almost. So they took out so many of these things that were fired at us, but he said, and those things that weren't taken out hit out in open spaces. And he said, that was a miracle. I believe in your God. Well, I think this is what's happening in that part of the world. I think that they are seeing these miracles. And there's so many people in this country that are praying for them. I mean, intercessors that they pray every day for Israel and for the people there to see the light and to come to Christ. And I look, as I've already established, I love the Jews. I just love the Jews.
I do too.
And they're wonderful people. And you can't have a better friend than a Jew because they are relational. That's just part of their character. It's part of who they are. They're relational. And when I lived over there, the commander of the base that I lived on there, and he and I became like brothers. And I was laying in a hammock in the jungle in Central America on a counter-narcotics operation. And the general back at Fort Bragg called me and he said, Jerry, he said, I hate to tell you this, but Amir Mattal was killed last night in South Lebanon. And it was one of those things where you say, it can't be. It can't be. Not Amir. They got this wrong. I went over to see his parents when I got back out of the jungle. And I wept with them. And there was a big painting up on the wall. His dad was a fairly well-established artist. And it was a table with four plates, three head food, and there were stripes, red stripes down the painting. And I said, David, tell me about the painting. He said, when I was grieving over Amir, he said, I'd get up at night and I'd paint. And I said, I get the symbology of the empty plate, but what are the red stripes for? He said, Amir was shot in the head, and his executive officer picked him up and put him on his shoulders and carried him back to the landing zone where the helicopter picked him up. And when they got back into the base in Israel and went inside, he was streaked with Amir's blood from head to toe. Sandy, that was the moment that I said, I've got skin in this game. Because they just killed my brother. And I will stand with them. America needs to stand with them. The Bible tells us that we'll be cursed if we don't. And I wish that our president understood that. You can't tell them after what they went through on the 7th of October last year, you can't tell them to go find a way to make peace. There is no peace. 5 years from now, they'll be right back and they'll do it again. and America needs to stand with them and encourage them, wipe them out. When the Israelites crossed the Jordan River, right before they crossed the Jordan River, what did God say to Joshua? He said, kill them all.
Yes, he did. Everything, their livestock,
kill them
everything.
All. That's what, and Netanyahu said that when this first started. He said, we've got to wipe them out. And that's what they got to do.
You know, what's been amazing, too, is to have Netanyahu invoke scripture and biblical characters. I mean, and so it's been an amazing thing. And I have to say, in keeping with what you just said, as believers in Christ, they are our brothers, literally. We are bonded with, even if we don't know it. And it's our God who's doing all these miracles over there. So it encourages, I'm thrilled to see that, plus it encourages me here at home, because I know our God can do something here too. We may not be spared. We're talking about things maybe we can't see, but we do trust Him, and I know you do too. Whatever happens, we trust Him. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't understand it all the time.
No.
But,
no, I don't either.
But I do. I trust Him.
Well, that was, thank you, General Boykin. That was great, and great stuff, and challenging, and very rewarding. I hope I have pastors listening and people who have not been taught. I think people are asleep at the wheel. Pastors, especially, have been taught and trained that Israel, you know, is irrelevant now, and doesn't have God's blessing, and it's sad to see all of the twisting of Scripture and theology on Israel, but the truth is the truth, and so you stated it today. So we've put a line in the sand for all those listening. So thank you, General Boykin.
It's a privilege being with you, Sandy, and God bless you.
Thank you. Same to you. Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from the morning show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you just to chat about what we just heard. You know, when in the first section with Lieutenant General Boykin, we were talking about Islam, and I know there's a lot of confusion about that. One of the problems, of course, there are many, but Sharia law is so horrible when it comes to women. That's one of the other reasons why Islam, in its basic teachings, if people embrace it, is not compatible with the West. It just doesn't. It just isn't. There's a recent recording I want to play for you. This is an imam who is preaching in a service. You can see the people. You see the women with the, you know, bowing down, covered in black, and the men looking up. And this is what, let's listen, actually, as he talks, and I'll translate over the top. I'll tell you what he's saying. Here it is. Women are just like animals. They're just like cows. They're just like sheep. They're just animals. They're just animals. They're just made for, you know, childbearing. That's why we have them. And of course, for man's pleasure. God made them to look like humans, so they don't frighten them. I just don't think people realize how bad Islam is for women. You know, Sharia law requires them to be stoned to death. There was this movie that was made a number of years ago that I saw. I don't think it ever got general release. I saw it in D.C., and it was the story, true story, of a woman being stoned. It was so, you know, beautiful woman, and they easily accused her of adultery. And I don't think she was, and the movie was not even, I'm sure there are adulteries in the Middle East, but I don't think she was guilty. And it was just a horrible story. And so this is the practice. And of course, they hang homosexuals, throw them off buildings. It is a cruel, cruel law. And it is, as I said, not compatible with Western law. And that's how General Boykin and I got acquainted. He knows so much about that. If you can imagine, after commanding officers from Mogadishu in Somalia, that he knew a lot about Islam. And that's one of the ways that, of course, he became came in the crosshairs of culture. And he really did get run through the mill about how he felt about Islam and what he was saying about it publicly. And that's when I first met him. But isn't the story something? I knew that you would enjoy it. I also just want to remark one last time before we say goodbye about his courage. It takes so much courage. Can you imagine a man of his stature and accomplishments losing his hearing and having to humble himself to have a piece of paper written out and to tell the story? And as he said, this is, you know, the biggest challenge of his life. But I want to underscore what I said in the interview. I saw him at an event not probably a few months ago, and he looked great. He looked great. I think this hearing thing has set him back. But, you know, if you can't hear, it affects so much of your life, so much of it. In every way, we just don't realize how much that affects our relationships, our ability to interact, the things that we know and hear, our confidence, all of that. So this was a big deal for him to share this. And he is such a leader of men and a leader of people, gracious in every way. Every time I hear, especially my husband loves General Boykin, he is a leader of men. Can you imagine him with soldiers? That commanding voice and his presence and his character. And so I wanted you to hear all of that conversation. I hope that you enjoyed it. We want to thank our sponsors. Timothy Plan is where you put your money, where your values are, and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. I want to thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.